Hello, podcasters. Welcome to another edition of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Tim Estradol. Joining me once again is the fabulous Jill Simonello out of Chicago. Hello, Jill.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Good. I'm putting Jill on the spot because she decided to go to the Cubs game and hang out over the 4th of July, so she was unaware of some of the breaking news in the automotive segment.
I decided to unplug, which everybody should do occasionally. That's all I have to say.
Okay. We'll give you that one. It's been a while since we did the podcast. We've kind of been doing some different stuff. I'm growing the YouTube channel and the Facebook and different places. But I want to get back to this because I think the podcast, I like it. I like talking to Jill. And I want to update you. There's been a lot of breaking news and a lot of like big changes going on. And so it's very timely to do another podcast. So let's dive right into it. Lots of rumors going on. There's lots of changes happening. So we have a new Silverado coming out, a new Sierra coming out, new Ram pickups are coming out. Just a lot of new pickups, a lot of new energy. And with all that said, there's going to be some changes globally in the marketplace. There's a lot of competitors now in the same segment. And Hyundai has been reported to be pursuing FCA if the stock price drops low enough. They're talking about launching a takeover bid. This is from the Asia Times. They named that activist fund Elliott Management is spurring the deal to take over FCA. Elliott was led by Paul Singer, who pressured Hyundai in April to merge with Mobis, and then demanded the company pay more than its investors. I didn't write that well. More than $10 billion excess cash. blah blah blah. I haven't been drinking yet this morning. So here's the deal: is that the story is that Hyundai's active fund management is thinking about spurring on the company to buy FCA now. FCA has been basically kind of on and off looking for a merger since 2014. Sergio sent a letter to GM a couple years ago asking for a merger. There's been rumors of talking with different brands. There's a rumor of the great China automotive company was going to buy Jeep. That was like last year. So there's lots of news going around this like this. Now, Hyundai denies the rumor. The Hyundai Motor America corporate sports spokesperson told Roadshow, "The rumor is totally groundless," but I don't know if it really is. I mean, so here's what you have in my view is you have Hyundai, Genesis, and Kia that sell cheap entry-level cars, and Genesis is a new emerging luxury brand. They sell some lower-end SUVs, which is the completely opposite of what FCA sells, right? So FCA has muscle cars, they have big expensive SUVs, they have pickups. They have the Jeeps, all the different off-road capable Jeeps. And so I kind of think on the economics of scale, a merger makes a lot of sense. You have small cars mated with a company that doesn't sell small cars, and they could really work together. I think there's potentially they could do something as far as make some money that way, as far as merging, or there's a technical partnership. They can kind of come together and cross-develop some different platforms and things. That's possible. Now, it's also possible, and probably more true, is that the automotive segment is getting bigger, and there's probably going to be more mergers in our future as, more companies going to see. So, Jill, with all that said, and I know you are fresh on this news, what do you think? Does it shock you? Does it surprise you? Where's your thinking here?
At the end of the day, Fiat Chrysler Automobiles has to do something. What's really interesting is they have some pretty cool products. I was actually, was it last week? It feels like it's been ages ago, but I think it was only last week. I was at the Chrysler What's New program. And there's a lot of stuff that I can't talk about. But one of the things that they did is they included an Alfa Romeo and Maserati program the day before the traditional Fiat Chrysler What's New. And we got a little bit of a look into the new 5-year plan, basically, from Fiat Chrysler. And, when that came out about a month ago, they talked about Alfa Romeo, they talked about Maserati, they talked about Jeep, they talked a little bit about Dodge. But the two brands that they didn't talk about were Fiat and Chrysler. And I was like, okay, how can you have a 5-year plan that includes everything except for your namesake?
Yeah, because, Ram, Jeep, automobile, I guess it has a certain... Ram, I guess Ram, Dodge, Jeep, but yeah.
Or it could be Alpha Jeep. I don't know. kind of like the Alpha Dog. I don't know. But they definitely need something. And I don't know if Hyundai is the answer. And by the way, I just want to pronounce that again for you. Hyundai, not Honda, not Hyundai, Hyundai. just want to make that clear. We're not talking about the other Asian automaker out there.
I really do try to get that right. I was in a trail truck driving the Kona, and I was really doing that 3 or 4 times. I just can't do it.
Hyundai. Like Sunday. It's really easy.
I say that out loud before I say it, and it doesn't come out that way.
But, you know, as far as an Asian automaker having a merger, I don't know how realistic that is. I mean, I think they're certainly looking for something. You know, previously they've tried to reach out to General Motors, which was a non-starter. But I don't know. I mean, maybe if they can rev up the Alfa Romeo and Maserati line, maybe they don't even need the merger. They're really starting to do a product onslaught, and they have some interesting thing coming. And you know, they're really high-end, luxury, nice. And so, I mean, in a way, that ties to your, well, what if they mate with somebody who isn't as high-end? But, I mean, in my mind, what that means is, okay, your Chrysler lineup needs more than a 300 and a minivan.
Yeah. Well, the minivan, they're killing, aren't they? Isn't Town Country going away? Or no, it's the Pacifica, sorry.
You know, I've heard rumors of that. I can't say for certain that is 100% true.
Yeah, so I was thinking Town and Country, but the Pacifica is still a Chrysler nameplate, isn't it?
Yep.
Which, I mean, that could easily be a Dodge Pacifica. I mean, it doesn't need to be a Chrysler Pacifica. It is interesting.
But they've been updated the Dodge version of the minivan for a while, so.
Yeah. It is interesting when you think about whether they should merge or not. I mean, you know, I've heard the same rumors you probably heard where Jeep is more valuable than the entire brand. I mean, you know, there's they're talking about going Ram, going global. There's some global launches of that product. If you sell out the two good pieces, they could kill Chrysler and get rid of Fiat and spin off Alpha, and they basically could sell Ram and Jeep, and that would be the company. I don't know. So they tried the Germans, right? So they tried to merge with the Germans. They've tried to merge with the Italians and the Fiat. Both those mergers were not great. The Fiat, you know, Fiat, they thought they'd bring in the U.S. and really sell some Fiats, and nobody's buying them, in my view. I mean, I'm sure people can email in and tell me I'm wrong, but
I'm like, I see a lot of them in Chicago, but I mean, I think they're city vehicles.
Yeah, and you know, I've maintained for a while on this podcast, we've talked back and forth on it, is that if you're making a product for a city vehicle, to me, most city dwellers are on the fence of buying a car or not buying a car, like going carless. And so that's not, to me, a growing market. I lived in Denver. I spent a whole year without a car. You know, I just rode the bus and rode my bike. It's not a necessity in the towns. And plus, those vehicles you're selling in the cities, they're not always the most fully loaded, expensive, high-trim vehicles either. Not the most profit. They're usually entry-level, cheap cars. And so I don't think there's a big business case there. So I don't know. It's interesting. I see a Fiat, I think, once every 2 months, maybe, you know, on the roads out here. We just don't see them that often. So I think that Asian market needs, some of those companies are trying to grow. And I think that, you know, for them to grow in the U.S. market, they're trying to get to a foothold. And buying or merging with another company makes a lot of sense. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if Hyundai is the one that would make that leap. I think that they are very focused right now on their own brands, especially with the launch of Genesis. And I don't know if they want Genesis to succeed, if it's in their best interest to diversify and go in a different direction.
So you're saying you don't want a Sonata Demon Red Eye?
No, actually, that would totally not work for me.
Oh, come on, like a Jeep Wrangler Sportage? It could work. All right, so let's move on, because I think that's interesting. It's an interesting rumor to talk about, and it's the latest FCA takeover kind of rumor, merger or thing. But I want to get next phase of this conversation is that second quarter results are out. And so I'm going to back up for a minute and explain why we have second quarter results is that GM a few months ago decided they're only going to release quarterly earnings, quarterly numbers. they got tired of doing the month per month game because it did not give a good perspective of where they're at in the industry, which is fine. Actually, I kind of like it better. And so second quarter ended in the end of June, and we had the results are out. And the reason I like to talk about these, I think the results are interesting. You find there's a story on pickuptrucktalk.com. There's a YouTube on it. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel and see that as well. Is that I think the quarterly earnings really cut through the bull, right? So we hear a lot from PR people about this and that, this and that. We think about a lot of this stuff, but the results are the results. Like, that's it. There's no arguing with the numbers. And I think this is interesting as far as what's coming up too. So let me get to the numbers. So the Ford F Series is up 4.9% over the year to year. They're at 450,000 units. For perspective, the industry on pickups on average is up 5.6%. So Ford is right in the average. Silverado is up 10.7%. And the Sierra is up 1.7%. So the GM trucks are up big. Ram is down 7%. And if you think about it, they're down 7% and you add in the industry average of up 5.6%, they're actually down considerable 13%. And so the reason I bring those two up and I get kind of excited about talking about those two is that those both manufacturers have new trucks coming out this fall. And so the question is, are consumers looking at the Ram truck going, oh, that's the prior gen, I really like the new 12-inch screen and new one, I'm gonna hold off? And are the Silverado customers going, man, that's a lot of cash in the hood in the 2018, and that 2019 didn't look that much better, so I'm gonna go ahead and buy the 2018. So is this a precursor to what's gonna happen in the fall? Are consumers really showing off right now what they thought about from the January auto show launches? Both trucks have incentivized. They both have a lot of money on the hood, and one's not selling and one is. And so that's why I like to talk about numbers. It's very interesting. And you look at the mid-size trucks are just taking off like crazy. The Tacoma, 116,000 units, up 22.9% year over year. That's a lot. The Colorado's up almost 40%. The Frontier is up 10%. I mean, the Canyon's up 13%. So those mid-size trucks are growing. So you have mid-size trucks are growing. The market's going to get bigger with the Wrangler coming out. You have the Silverado going down and the Sierra going down, but the Ram are going up and the Ram going down. And then you have the bottom dwellers. Nissan Titan, year over year, is down 4.8%, which that's down 10% on industry average. And that's pretty much a new truck. I mean, and the Honda Ridgeline is down 20%. So those are the numbers, folks. That's what people are buying. And I know that Nissan Titan's got money on the hood as well. So, but I want to get back to this point because I think you kind of thought about it too. Do you think that the consumers are saying the same stuff we're seeing? I'm really excited about the Ram product. I'm really excited about the new Ram pickup. The Silverado, I have a lot of questions. That's kind of where I'm at. I mean, I like the GMC Sierra. I think the new Sierra is really much different than the Silverado. I think there's something to say there. But do the numbers reflect what you're thinking about this fall?
I mean, they could. And full disclosure, I haven't really spent any time with the Silverado or Sierra, but I've spent a significant amount of time with the new 2019 Ram 1500, which is really, really amazing. So if people are holding out for that 12-inch screen and all of the, you know, amenities that come with it, I totally get that. But I could totally see that being the case because you're right. I mean, from what I've seen from afar, you know, the 2018 and 2019 models of the GM products don't really look that different. I mean, what is it? The GMC has that tailgate.
Yeah, the cool carbon. Yep.
Tailgate that is like eight different positions or whatever. But beyond that, what's the catch? You know, what's the draw?
Yeah, what's interesting is I think the new Silverado has really weird headlights too, and I think as much as people talk about trucks being capable and you need a pickup that hauls a lot and tows a lot, I know a lot of guys that buy trucks based on looks. I mean, you want a truck you're proud of in the driveway, and I have my concerns with the front grille. I think they really went too far with what they were trying to do with that, and I think it doesn't look great to me. And so I think consumers are seeing that too. What's interesting as well is these numbers came out, and about the same time, the MSRP for the 2019 model came out as well. So we have the pricing now. And the LT crew cab, the base level crew cab for the 2019 Silverado is $700 less than the 2018 model is today. And it has standard equipment. The new 2.7-liter turbo engine is standard. And 8-speed transmission, start-stop technology, which Jill loves, and active aero shutters. And so it's got more safety technology standard, and it starts less. And when you go up to the upscale high country, even with the 5.3-liter V8, with the new dynamic fuel management, and all the lane departure assist, side, you know, advanced trailing system, all that kind of stuff, that's only $1,000 more than what the current generation is. And so it does make me wonder. It's like, so you're going to go ahead and make the new truck not cost that much more versus the old truck because you're trying to get sales of hold, get some sales out the door early. It's a very interesting play here. And it's, I just am fascinated by the numbers because, you know, to me, that tells me what the consumers are doing. They're either taking the cash now and buying the truck, and they're just not so impressed.
Well, I mean, the other thing, too, that could be going on, and I'm talking about the pricing being released and being lower, is, you know, maybe they're trying to price it so they don't have to incentivize.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I remember talking years ago to a rep who said that no matter what new features you have in your truck, cash in the hood always sells, you know, and so people are always looking for a bargain. And right. It could be, it is interesting that they have all this new technology and they drop the price. And so, I don't know. I like Chevys. I own several Chevys, but I'm just really concerned. I just don't know what's going on with them. I can't wait. In another couple of weeks, the 1st of August, I'll be in Jackson doing the Chevy Silverado drive, and it's supposed to be a full day of like presentations and understanding what's going on over there. And hopefully some excitement. Hopefully, you know, I leave there and I'm excited. I'm going to write a bunch of stuff about it, do some videos. But currently, I'm more excited about the Ram. I really am. I just am.
And the Ram is pretty cool.
Yeah, and I think about the midsize truck sales are just booming, which nobody ever saw that. But I want to get down to the last two points on this chart was the Nissan Titan is down 4.8%, which just really concerns me. Understand something here with this truck is they have an XD version, the regular half-ton version. They have a diesel engine. They have different crew cab, extended cab, and regular cab. They have new cab, all different bed lengths. They have 100,000-mile warranty. I mean, they got a lot of stuff going on with this pickup, a lot more than they had the previous generation pickup, and they have just not done well. And the Ridgeline's interesting conversation, too. I was theorizing that to me the marketing from the Ridgeline just is off. I haven't heard anybody. I've heard a lot of people like the truck, and I like the truck. I like the Ridgeline. It rides nice. It's comfortable. It's, you know, it's sort of stylish inside. The outside, they need new front end, but I haven't heard anybody really talk about the bed speaker. Like all these reviews, like when they launched the Ridgeline, the guy on the stage, the first thing he said about the truck was about the in bed speaker. In the rear bed. And I read all these reviews and talk to all these truck guys, and nobody talks about the speaker. And I'm like, what? I mean, kind of a marketing fail there, and now you're down 20%. So I don't know. It's just interesting. So
yeah, no, and I really liked the Ridgeline. I drove it from Chicago to Detroit the year that it won the Truck of the Year. So what? Yeah. That was 2017. It won the Truck of the Year. And it has a very solid ride to it. It doesn't drive like a truck, but I think it's built on the Pilot platform, right?
Yeah, so it's a unibody truck, but it has a frame, and it's basically a Pilot with a bed is kind of what you say. So it has a much nicer ride quality for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I just think all right, I'm going to pick on NACTOY for a minute. NACTOY's North American Car and Truck of the Year. It's an annual competition. They actually have sometimes the drives are in Hell, Michigan, which is hilarious. NACTOY is famous, and Motor Trend's famous as well, of picking Car and Truck of the Year that are complete flops in the marketplace. I mean, there's a whole history of them. And so I remember when the Ridgeline won, and it won over some good competition. And it's just like, I think it beat the Tacoma. I think that's the deal. I think it beat the Tacoma that year, which is just fascinating to me. And I remember the conversations back then, and I was starting fights. I mean, you know, it was kind of the thing I did. I was starting fights. And I was like, you know, to me, the Ridgeline is a perfect example of what an automotive journalist thinks a pickup should be. And it's not an example of what consumers think a pickup should be. And there's a story that came out on Autoblog last week, and the guy Autoblog got a long-term loaner of a Honda Ridgeline, and mm-hmm. he literally wrote that this is the only pickup you should ever need. And in the story, he's like, anything else you decide to buy is complete crap. And I'm like, it's down 20%, guys. It's down 20%. Understand where it's at.
You made a really good point right there, because I love the Ridgeline. Yep. But I'm a city dweller who, you know, will never use a pickup truck for the way it's intended to be used. Mm-hmm. Yet, you know, you live out in the hinterlands, and you will use a pickup truck the way it's supposed to be used. And so, I mean, that's kind of an interesting thing. And I would say probably 90%, if not higher, of all automotive journalists will never use a pickup truck the way it's supposed to be used.
Yeah.
And so I try to keep that in mind when I'm reviewing a pickup truck, but it's hard. It's really hard to keep in mind, like, how it's supposed to be used, because I am not using it that way.
No. Yeah. So there's I wasn't going to get into this, but maybe I will. There was a recent blow up over YouTube, and I've been spending a lot more time over there trying to grow the channel. But Doug DeMiro, is a pretty well-known YouTuber, and he used to work at T-Tech, I think it was, or Jalopnik, one of the two. Anyways, he got a Chevy Colorado ZR2. This is the off-road performance package performance pickup from the Colorado. And he had a whole video, and you can watch it. It's on Doug DeMuro, DeMuro. And I had some people actually ask me about it, because it's a very interesting review. There's a Turo service, I guess. Turo is a service, like a website, an app probably at this point. You can rent somebody else's performance vehicle. So you can fly in somewhere, and people offer up their cars or trucks, and you can rent these things. And so he flew to Seattle, because, like, for whatever reason, and he used Turo, and he found a Colorado ZR2. And this Colorado ZR2 is a crew cab with a diesel, and it's got a sport bar in the back. Well, his initial comment on the truck was how he started comparing it to the Ford Raptor right off the bat, which is just absurd. It's just absurd. And then he started comparing it towing capacity. And he actually said the Colorado ZR2 was able to tow 7,700 pounds, which turns out TFL did a whole TFL Now on it, is inaccurate. He completely misstated the towing capacity. The towing capacity on the ZR2 is actually 5,000 pounds. So he completely blew it on towing capacity. And so, to bring up your point on automotive journalists and stuff, it's like, that's the equivalent of telling somebody that ZL1, the Corvette, does a quarter mile in 4 seconds versus 7 seconds, okay? So from a performance car standpoint, you know that's a huge deal. Right? Well, from a truck standpoint, you're talking 5,700 pounds. That's about the equivalent of how far he was off. And TFL made a big deal about that. And my perspective is, nobody in their right freaking mind is going to tow something with 7,700 pounds in a midsize truck. That's just stupid as hell. But my other point on this is that he's completely so far lost on this. Like, the Raptor retails for $70,000. I mean, that's about the average price of it. The Colorado is about $50,000. The Colorado could freaking sit in the bed of the Raptor. I mean, they're completely different trucks. And so he never talked about Tacoma TRD Pro, never talked about Nissan Frontier Pro 4X, never talked about comparable midsize trucks. And nobody is – and he makes this point about price and towing capacity. And I'm sorry, but if you're shopping for a ZR2 – and you're comparing the ZR2 to the Raptor based on towing capacity and price, you're a moron. You're an absolute moron.
So tell me what you really feel about that.
Sorry. Because come on. Who the freak cares about that? Like, that's ridiculous to talk about towing capacity in an off-road truck. And he talked about it three times. And then he went on and on about the sport bar, which is just an accessory they install at dealer. The Sierra has one, you can get one, the Canyon has one, and the Silverado, it's just a damn accessory. So I don't know.
So what I'm getting from you is, before I ever publish another review on a pickup truck, I should make sure that I run it past your bullshit detector first.
Yeah, so I mean, I...
People don't effing care, Jill. Don't write that. Got it. Okay.
So, you know, because I'll tell you this. I was a trooper. I made it 8 minutes and 54 seconds into his 20-minute long video.
Which, hashtag way too long.
Yes, way too long. And well, I just couldn't stand it anymore. It just really irritated me. So, and I haven't done anything about it. Like, I saw on the podcast. People have asked me to do a video ripping apart his review. And I don't know. I hate throwing stones like that because once you...
You just kind of threw a stone there.
I know. It's a tough thing. But once you start going down that road, I mean, where do you stop? That's the problem. All right. Anyways, I wasn't gonna get into that, and you got me into that. Got me fired up over that. Yeah. I want to take a break. I want to come back. I don't wanna make this again. Hashtag way too long. Brandon Retting is a viewer on our YouTube. I do some live streams on Monday, or actually Sunday nights now. We're gonna do a live stream on Sunday nights at what is it gonna be? Like, it's like 9 p.m. Eastern time. Anyways, he wanted to talk trucks. And so I said, hell yeah, let's talk trucks. And I'm going to play his interview next. He's in San Francisco. He's really interesting viewpoints, different trucks. And if you're interested in talking to me, send me an email at tim@pickuptrucktalk.com. I like talking to consumers. I like getting you guys' feedback. Like, we were talking about the ZR2, and he said that the Tacoma TRD Pro, in his view, wasn't nearly the same truck. And I thought that was interesting because they're actually really closely competitors. So I don't know. I like getting the feedback. Really interesting guys talking about. And then we're gonna be back. And just after that, Jill's gonna share her perspective on a Jaguar I-Pace. This is an electric SUV, which might get me a little fired up because those are kind of oxymorons. But hey, Jill's got a really good perspective on it. I want to make sure I talk to her and get her viewpoint. So we'll be right back with more Pickup Truck Plus SUV talk. Tonight we have a special guest. Tonight we have a listener who wanted to get involved in the podcast, and you're always welcome to it. tim@pickuptrucktalk.com. we have Brandon. I didn't even know how to say your last name. Redding.
R-E-T-T-I-G. Redding.
All right, so Brandon, so welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
You are our San Francisco Bay Area guy.
Yes.
And so my first primary question for you is, how can you live in San Francisco and be interested in trucks? Like, you should be driving the latest Tesla and the Chevy Bolt and the latest luxury car, right? Is that what you see in San Francisco?
Yeah, you're right. In fact, it's funny you mentioned that, because a couple months ago we went to the auto show down in the Silicon Valley, and Chevy had a test drive event set up there. And the truck line, there was nobody in the truck line, but everyone was in the line to test drive the Chevy Bolt and the Chevy Volt. So I got to test drive all the trucks, no problem.
So you're that guy in the city who's like, damn it, no, I'm driving a pickup.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you drive currently? Do you drive a pickup?
Yes, a 2006 Chevy Colorado.
Do you really? So
yes.
So how does that work in the city? So people are always like, you can't drive pickups in the city, they're too big, they don't fit.
Oh, that's a Chevy Colorado is really the perfect pickup for a city. Its size is just perfect. I mean, they're a little long because mine is a crew cab, but the width is really hardly any wider than a car. Mm. So you can fit into any parking spot you need to.
Okay, so you have a 2006 Chevy Colorado.
Yes.
And you have proven to me through emails and conversations that you're well aware of the truck news coming out. And right now. It's crazy, right? It's amazing how much news is coming out. Every time you turn around, there's a new story.
Yes.
So are you like ready to buy something new? Are you ready, like, oh my gosh, I have my eye on this and that?
Or just, where just you interested at? I'm just always interested in what the latest and greatest things in the market. So okay. Just like to stay informed on all that.
So out of all the truck news lately, what has really got your attention?
I think the biggest thing for me, being a Chevy Colorado owner, was that Chevy Colorado Bison. That was rumored about a month or so ago. That I guess it didn't end up happening, but we'll see. Maybe it will.
Well, yeah, it still may work. That was the one that had the snorkel. It had the off-road chops on it.
Yes.
It was the SEMA version of it that they decided they have a logo now.
Built by American Expedition Vehicles, I believe.
Yep. And the logo is that the Bison, that's what they're going to call it.
Yeah.
So where are you at? Are you a gambling man? Are you putting money down saying the bison's coming? Or are you going to be like, well, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think what they meant by that was just those parts that were released by AEV aftermarket for the Colorado. They did, as they released maybe a few weeks ago, they released that snorkel for all Colorados, and then those the wheels too, the beadlock wheels.
No, look at you being all informed and getting behind the lines. I mean, I don't think many journalists have even got that point. that's being well informed. So, have you driven the new Colorado?
Yes, actually, I got to drive a 2018 ZR2 Midnight Edition.
So, how is it? How is it from your perspective? I've driven the older Colorado and I've driven the newer Colorado. Is it night and day difference to you, like it is for me?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, it's just not even similar. The old Colorado just felt kind of a lot cheaper, a lot. Like they didn't really put as much effort into it as they did with this new one. This new one feels like a luxury car compared to the old one.
So have you driven the Canyon, the GMC equivalent?
I have not driven the Canyon. I assume it's very similar though.
Well, so that assumption's out there a lot, right? That they're the same. Because that's the way it was back in the day. They were the same pickup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I will tell you, I drove the GMC Canyon Denali, which you may have seen on the YouTube video.
Yes.
And it is quite the different pickup. It's quite quite luxurious inside, which is surprising, right? I mean, because back in the day, the pickups used to be fuel economy. That was a big concern.
Yeah.
And luxurious, right? And so not luxurious, but the cheap. And now you have luxurious pickups.
Yeah, and that Colorado that I drove was over it's over 50 grand for that ZR2 Midnight Edition.
Right. Well, that's pocket change, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's expensive for a midsize. That's deep into full size territory.
Right. So as a midsize truck owner, do you cross the line there between it can't be too expensive or I'll just buy a full size instead?
Yeah, I think so. I think probably anywhere in the low 40s is probably where a lot of people start switching to looking at the full size instead.
You don't think it's because that people stay midsize because of the size and easy to drive and ease to park?
I'm sure in some cases, yeah, it's true. Yeah. I guess it just depends on the person. But I think at the end of the day, if you can get more pickup truck for less money, it makes more sense to go with the full size.
Okay. All right. I'll give you that one. What about the Ford Ranger as a midsize truck owner? Ford Ranger coming back?
Yeah, it's an interesting entrance to the marketplace. A little disappointed that they're not offering more options with it. No V6 option, which I kind of would have hoped for, as well as there's only two configurations. There's no crew cab long bed like its competitor. There's no diesel option. And they also only offer the one transmission too, but we'll see. We'll see. It could perform better than I expect it to. So
yeah, it seems like they're being rather cautious in bringing that
back. They are. I think what Ford's trying to do is they just don't want the Ranger to compete with the F-150 sales.
Oh, I mean, that's why they killed it in the first place, was it? Cannibalizing. So what about Tacoma? Now, Tacoma, in the Bay Area there, and especially California, Tacomas are everywhere, correct?
Yeah, I think I would say they're probably the most popular midsize truck out here.
Yeah, so have you kept an eye on Tacomas? Is that something you benchmark against Colorado?
I mean, sure, the Tacoma's the sales leader, but compared to the Colorado, I think the Tacoma just feels very small inside. The seating position isn't very comfortable. It's a nice truck. It's very reliable, I'm sure. But at the end of the day, I think that the Chevy is probably the nicest truck in the market right now.
Have you driven the old school Eastern Frontier?
I have not. No, those look and feel very cheap, though. I feel like they need an update.
Well, I mean,
after
that's
so many years.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Reagan was still in office when they came out with that.
Yeah, right.
But, I mean, you know, I mean, it's an old cheap pickup, but that's what's selling in the midsize, right?
I mean, that's why
they still sell. They sell four times as many Frontiers as they do Titans because of the cheapness of it.
Yeah, exactly. That makes sense. A lot of buyers want a cheap pickup.
So what about the growth in diesel and midsize? Do you think that is something that consumers really demand? Are you demanding a diesel? Do you think that makes a lot of sense?
I think it makes quite a bit of sense in the midsize market because you can get such good fuel economy with it. Of course, living in California, it wouldn't make any sense to own one because the price of diesel is significantly higher than the price of gas. But elsewhere where the prices are a little bit more similar, it would probably make sense to get a diesel with the good fuel economy. I think in the Colorado, you can get up to 30 on the highway. So it's pretty good.
So let's talk about fuel economy. What's your price right now that you've been driving around? What's the highest price you've seen?
I've seen $4 already here in California.
Already?
Yes. I've been able to get it for about $3.75 lately, though, for gas.
So does that push you to think about buying a small economical car?
No. I mean, I get pretty good gas mileage. I get like, once I the last tank was about 19 and a half, so it's pretty decent for a truck.
Well, and you know, and my argument has been for a long time that if you think about it, if you're going to spend $200 more a month on a small economical car to save $20 a month in gas, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. It's, you're going to enjoy the truck more anyways. You'd be able to use it for more things. So.
So what do you do with the truck? Do you just drive around town, or do you, are you a surfer, or are you a motorbike guy?
Mountain biker. So use it for mountain biking. I've hauled kayaks in it before. Take it skiing.
Okay.
So as well as just commuting around town and stuff too. So.
So let's just say here you're an active younger guy than I am. Yeah. So that's a pretty fair assessment. do you like the monochromatic look? I mean, so we just talked about a little bit on the live stream. If you haven't checked the live stream out, we have a live stream on YouTube. I drink whiskey and make obnoxious stories. if you haven't seen that yet, make sure you check it out. There'll be a pickup truck and SUV talk. But monochromatic, no chrome, is the way of the future. Like, every brand is offering this midnight edition, no chrome looking truck. What do you think? You drove one. You said you drove the Colorado Z71, the midnight edition. So you've gotten this phenomena. You're well aware of this. Mm-hmm. Is it that sexy to you? Is that appealing?
In the midnight edition package, I wasn't too impressed with it. I think they were pricing the package itself as like $3,000 or a little. I actually might have been a little more expensive than that, and it didn't really include very much. It included included black wheels, which didn't really look much better. It included a LED light bars, which are kind of small, and it also included that the spare tire carrier in the bed, which I wasn't too impressed with. Because that's it takes up all your bed space. You can't use it. But it was a good-looking truck. I definitely thought it was a good-looking truck.
So are you more of the fan of you'd modify it yourself and buy a stock version than you would buy the ready-to-go version off the lot?
No, I like the ready-to-go versions. I think that's really cool that these companies are putting out some great pickups straight from the factory. There's a lot of good off-road trucks on the market right now.
Okay, so speaking of off-road trucks, Jeep Wrangler pickup.
Yes.
Yeah. Jeep Wrangler pickup. I mean, California would be a huge market for that, right?
I would assume so. I would think so. The Jeep Wranglers are very popular out here, in the four-door configuration.
Do you think the pickup is the next evolution there, that people are going to go bonkers over it?
I don't know if they'd go crazy over it, but I think some people would definitely buy it. I mean, it's basically just a four-door Wrangler with a bed on it, so It's probably got a lot of off-road capability, a good daily driver. It's got room for five people comfortably. It's kind of a good replacement for a family SUV.
Okay, so let's talk about the last midsize and last, that's kind of big truck news.
Yeah.
The Ram Dakota, Ram Dakota. There's been conversation. I've talked to different journalists. We don't know if it's for the U.S. or not. There's some debate on whether they bring it to the U.S. Do you think that Ram needs a midsize pickup?
I think there's plenty of space for it in the market. I mean, if they come in because I think the Jeep pickup, which is also made by FCA, would be a little bit more expensive, probably on the top end of the price range for midsize trucks, whereas the Dakota could come in with like an extended cab version and even a crew cab version in more base trim levels in the 20s and low 30s and probably be able to have a good market. The only thing I was kind of thinking about earlier is that all of the it seems like a lot of the powertrains that the Jeep truck would use would also be used in the Ram Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd be very similar trucks, and I'm assuming that the Ram and FCA do not want those trucks cross-shopped between each other.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what they do.
And that's the reason why they got rid of the minivan, they got rid of the Dodge Caravan,
mm-hmm.
and they got rid of the Town & Country to make one minivan. They solidified their market, their brands, to make it more, you know, diversified as far as, or more, not diversified, but more, that it's more separation, but there's not like cross-shopping between them. Because, well, that's kind of dumb. You walk in the FCA lot and you're competing with your own vehicles on the lot. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
What do you think about the latest news? And I know you've been aware of this, and I haven't, it's on my to-do list, but there are there's a story going around that there are between $12,000 to $16,000 off in incentives on full size trucks right now. Trying to blow out the 18s to bring 19s because we have so many new 19 models coming in. If I said to you, you could trade in your Colorado and I'm going to give you $16,000 off a new full size truck, are you interested?
I still wouldn't be interested because a lot of the $16,000 off MSRPs are on pretty expensive trucks. But I've seen that in my area with specifically what you're talking about. The local Chevy dealership has had, I've seen one up to $17,500 off MSRP.
Isn't that kind of nuts?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's crazy. I don't know how they make any money on that truck. Well, what they're doing, I mean, the trucks are, they're basically $50,000 LT equipped, LT trim level equipped trucks with the 5.3 V8s. So they're selling them in the low 30s. That's a pretty good discount.
Well, does it also speak to you about how much profit there are in full-size trucks?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, great profits in the full-size trucks. And I've even seen recently, the last week, I've seen the Nissan Titans at the dealership down the street. They have a couple trucks out there, $12,000 and $15,000 off MSRP.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any secret that Nissan is hurting for truck sales.
Yes.
They had 2,700 units sold last month, which is just, I mean, it's terrible.
It's barely any more than the Honda Ridgeline sells. So.
Yeah, and I'll be honest. I like the Ridgeline. Have you driven a Ridgeline?
Yes, I've driven a first gen Ridgeline, not a second gen.
So the Ridgeline often gets lost in conversation, right? So you talk about mid-sized trucks, you always forget about Ridgeline. I drove it, and I drove it here in Nebraska. I drove it off-road, and it handled the off-road really amazingly well. And what's crazy about it is it's a unibody truck, but it has a frame. Did you know it has a frame?
No, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, so I wrote a story.
I didn't remember you talking about that. But
yeah, I wrote a story on Truck Trend about the frame, and I was interviewing the chief engineer in Texas. And he talks about his frame, and I was like, whoa, what? Wait. And so I so I recorded the whole thing, and I did a story, and I actually had to have Honda, their PR team, and their graphic design people design me a sketch that showed the frame and went live on Truck Trend. It's one of the undersung stories ever about the Ridgeline was that it actually has a frame.
That's interesting. I was at the Honda dealership the other day, and they only had one brand new Ridgeline on the lot. But then I walked through the used lot. They had 5 second-generation Ridgelines.
Really?
And stuff. Yeah.
It's not a bad pickup. There's nothing really wrong with it. It's a great, I would think, great San Francisco kind of area pickup.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
It rides nice. It's got a comfortable interior. It's 4. I mean, it's kind of what the
deal is. It's a little bigger than most of the mid-sized trucks, and at least with the interior.
Yeah. So it's got
it's
room.
A comfortable truck. Yeah.
It's kind of weird how that's going to go. Now, so what are future trucks? Have you seen I'm sure you have. You're an astute pickup fan, and you follow the news. Mm-hmm. Hyundai Santa Cruz.
Yeah. So I don't think that will come to market.
Are you betting against it?
At this point, yes, I think I am.
Yeah. So
there's not really a market for those unibody trucks. I mean, as we've seen with the Honda, it only sells a little over 2,000 trucks a month. And if Hyundai comes in there, I don't know, what are they going to take half of those sales? If someone is selling 1,000 trucks a month, really, that's not, you can't make a profit on that.
But that's the argument, is that it's perfect for your area. It's not great for my area, it's perfect for your area.
Yeah, well, then Hyundai would really have to do a good job trying to sell it to people as a better alternative to SUVs and cars.
I think that'd be a tough fight.
It would be.
All right, so I'm going to ask you one last question. Mm-hmm. Autonomous vehicles. Are you interested?
No. We've actually, in the local area, there's been several incidents. No guarantees that this was caused by the autopilot, but with the Teslas, there's been several crashes I've noticed in the news lately. And it's kind of concerning. Like, how does an autonomous vehicle account for like a construction zone or some changing traffic conditions? I don't know if it can yet. I don't know. I mean, I think the technology will get there eventually. I just don't think it's really there yet.
It's interesting insight. I appreciate being on the show. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts. I think it's interesting to get, I do a lot with my writing and my stuff out there, but I don't know that I'm in a silo or if people share my viewpoint, and it's good to get your viewpoint.
Yeah.
So thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure.
And if you want, we'll be right back. All right, and finally on today's program, global jet setter Jill Spinella went to a fabulous place to drive the new Jaguar I-Pace. Would you please, Jill, tell us where you went, and please tell us what the Jaguar I-Pace is first before we get to your thoughts.
Yeah, so we went to Portugal. And
is that in the U.S.? Is that like Portugal, Maine? Is that...
No, that would be Portugal as in the country across the ocean. So the really interesting thing is this is an incredibly global vehicle. And so the reason why they did the launch overseas instead of in the United States is because they had something like 50 waves of journalists coming through, only four of which were from the United States. And I'm probably over exaggerating a little bit, but there were at least like 30 waves or 20 waves. There were a lot of waves, but like the smallest percentage of people coming through were from the United States. Wow. So it just made more sense for them to do it over there than over here. Not to mention the fact that, by the way, Portugal is a little bit closer to England, where the vehicles are produced. So we were in Portugal, and so the vehicle, it's all new for 2019. It's the first all-electric vehicle from Jaguar. It's hard to describe, you know. It's funny because we had this discussion amongst the journalists on the launch: is it an SUV or is it a wagon? Because and what does it most closely align itself with? Like, what does it look like the most? Because it almost, in a way, looks a little bit like a wagon, but it certainly has SUV proportions and capabilities. And then we're like, all right, if we were going to compare it to a gasoline vehicle, like, what SUV in the gasoline world would we most likely compare it to? And I think what we came up with was the Porsche Macan. Because the I-Pace is actually bigger than the E-Pace, but just like an inch smaller than the F-Pace. And it's got a lower center of gravity than both of those vehicles, which is kind of where I was like, well, kind of wagony because of the lower center of gravity. But it's really a fascinating vehicle. And after I drove this vehicle, I thought, okay, I'm totally on board with an electric future. Up until this point, I was kind of wary of thinking of a world without a V8 engine. Mm-hmm. And one of the really cool things that Jaguar did is that, you know, early in the morning, you know, we started driving this vehicle on twisty roads and, you know, through countrysides. And we come to this stopping point before we go to lunch. And I'm watching, like, my car was like the last one there because we stopped to take some pictures. And so we get there and I'm looking, and these vehicles are literally traveling up a mountain and like a trail. I want to say it was 22-inch carbon fiber wheels on the vehicle that we were driving. And I'm like, you want me to do what? You want me to go where? I'm like, all right. And before you got to this hill, though, they had us basically drive through a 19-inch river or pool, like not pool, but like a creek or whatever you want to call it. It's probably not a river. But we like took an electric car through 19 inches of water. And then, you know, we went up, and we didn't do any like crazy Land Rover-esque off-road maneuvers with, you know, off-camber wheels and that kind of stuff. But, you know, through gravel, through a little bit of mud and ruts, through, you know, some simple stuff. Like if you were going camping to, you know, a site, if you were going through the countryside a little bit and trying to get to a place for a picnic or something like that. So nothing crazy. But yeah, we did some mild off-roading, and I thought I would never think to take an electric car through a puddle of water, let alone 19 inches. Yet that's the capability. It can go through 19 inches of water. Then, you know, we get to the top of this really big hill, and our view is of a racetrack, which is where we're having our lunch. And I'm thinking, okay, yeah, we're just going to go have lunch here. No. We actually then took these vehicles on the racetrack. And they gave us different vehicles because, like, ours had mud and rocks in the wheels at this point. But the interesting thing they did there is they put us on the track and first in an F-Type. And they're like, we want you to kind of get the comparison and the nuance between this is our sports car and this is our electric car. So granted, I was still learning the track. And it was a very tight and technical track. And I managed to get up to about 200. I managed to get quite up to 200 kilometers per hour while I was driving the F-Type on the track. But as soon as I got into the I-Pace and I was starting to get more familiar with the track, right seat instructors with us, so we didn't do anything stupid, but he kept every time I would like try and slow down, he'd be like, go faster, go faster, go faster. And I thought, all right, I guess I'm going faster. And I ended up topping 200 kilometers per hour in the I-Pace on a racetrack. And that was faster than I was able to go in the F-Type. But again, at the beginning, I was still learning the track. And you could certainly feel the differences. The F-Type, hunkered down, held the curves, didn't slide at all. And then once you're in the I-Pace, you're kind of like drifting a little bit into the corners. But it was just impressive that it could handle, the hard accelerations and the decelerations and the track that we were on, for anybody out there who is a racetrack aficionado, it was the Autódromo de Algarve in Portugal, which is apparently kind of a big deal. And it was, I think there was just an F1 race there or something, but it's kind of a cool little track, but the Autódromo in Portugal. And so it was fascinating to kind of see, okay, we were able to take this off-road, then we were able to put it on a racetrack, and then we were able to, drive home, or drive around the city or the area some more. And I walked away from that with my mind completely blown. To think that this vehicle, it has a 90 kilowatt hour battery pack, and it delivers 394 horsepower and 512 pound-feet of torque. So that is approaching like V8 turbocharged or supercharged territory there. And then, with the lower center of gravity and a 50-50 weight distribution, you add that into the mix, it's actually kind of a fun little vehicle to drive. And I don't know, part of me, like, I was just like, oh, but then you get rid of the throaty, exhaust, and what about, but I'm like, meh, who needs it? I was just overall incredibly, incredibly impressed with the I-Pace. And I want to say, well, since I've written the article at this point, but it has 250 miles of range, and they do some interesting things. I mean, you're probably still not quite comfortable saying, okay, I want to drive from Chicago to Indianapolis, which Chicago to Indianapolis is about 200 miles, and so you might have a little bit of anxiety about doing that, even though you have that extra 40 miles of or 50 miles of range. I think it's maybe 240 miles of range, and not 250. And so you might still have some anxiety there, but one of the interesting things that they do is they put a lot of technology into the car to kind of abate that anxiety. So if you are using their navigation system, it is predictive. And so if I plugged in, okay, I want to go from here to Indianapolis to visit my sister, and they will look along your route and they will predict a route that is more fuel efficient based on traffic and terrain and weather conditions. And they will tell you, okay, right now your battery is at 100%, and then by the time you reach your sister's house in Indianapolis, your battery will be like 20% or 10% or whatever it is. And they'll tell you where you are, so you can be like, okay, I'm comfortable with that, or, oh, I'm not really comfortable with that. But then it'll also, there's another screen in there that you can go to, and it'll tell you what's sucking the most energy from the battery. So if you have your air conditioning on, if you have your heated steering wheel on, if you have heated seats on, whatever systems are pulling from the battery, it'll tell you, you can see what is pulling the most juice, and then you can turn those systems off. Like if you're getting close to where you're starting to feel some anxiety. So I don't know. They did a lot of clever things in this vehicle. And from an automaker that can actually mass produce vehicles, I don't know. It's luxury. It's gorgeous. They've really done a nice job with the interior, the exterior. They've got some nice features. It drives really well. I don't think I really have anything bad to say about it. I totally got fired up about this because I really, really enjoyed this vehicle.
All right, and so I'm trying to think what questions I have for you because you just really nailed everything. And you didn't have what they say about charging times. Like, is it a long charging time?
So let's see if I can pull this out of my head or if I can find it in my article. I know that if to charge up to about 80%, it will take you 40 minutes using a fast charge station. So if there were a really good infrastructure, which there isn't in the United States, but if there were a good infrastructure, you could conceivably, go and stop and get like a coffee or a lunch, like halfway into your trip, and you'd be back up at 80% of your battery life.
I think for long distance traveling, it just changes the way you travel. You're not going to make, mm-hmm. you're not trying to make good time. You're going to get there when you get there and just stop and charge along your way. It's just a different way to travel.
Yeah. So, it is definitely a different way to travel. And, I think until the infrastructure gets into place, which is probably conceivably still 5 to 10 years off, maybe generously saying that, until that happens, I think it's going to be hard for people to say, this is going to be my only car. This is the car I'm going to drive for road trips. This is it. But I think as more people begin to adopt electric cars and as automakers start to, push for some form of electric in all of their vehicles, I think that it will, the infrastructure system will take care of itself. But it's chicken and egg. You have to build the cars, but then people have to buy the cars, and people have to buy them in such a force that then, the infrastructure is built just naturally. Yeah. So I don't know, but I want to say, and again, I tried to skim through my article really quick while we're talking, but and I didn't see it, but I think that the charge time from zero, if you were charging like on a level 2 charger at home, would be about 13 hours. So if you have your own charger at home, but it's going to be your fast charge. If you are out and about or whatever, that's 40 minutes for about 80%.
It's exciting. I've said for a while that we need electric SUV or electric wagon. I mean, mm-hmm. we do these small electric cars and then nobody's mm-hmm. buying cars. And so it doesn't, it doesn't make any sense. I still think electric pickup makes a lot of sense too for certain areas, landscapers, companies that only do mm-hmm. direct driving, things like that. I mean, in a rural area, it's hard to see electric because it doesn't work so well out here. But I think in city driving, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I could see that. If you're not, if you're only driving around town, plug it in at night, I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I mean, the great thing about this vehicle, because the battery pack is literally underneath the vehicle, which is why it has such a low center of gravity, it doesn't sacrifice any passenger or cargo volume.
Hmm. Well, it's certainly...
So that's another good point.
Certainly sounds exciting. I can't wait to see one myself. What's great about this podcast is Jill does certain things, I do certain things, and we kind of come together and talk about it. So speaking of that, we'll be back with more next week on Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. We promise we'll do a next week episode. In the meantime, make sure you check us out on social media. We're on Pickup Truck Plus SUV on most social media networks, even Pinterest, however the hell that works. We're on YouTube, as I was about to check that out. And we're checking on pickuptrucktalk.com for more. And thanks, Jill, for joining us today's show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And we'll see you down the road.